things conservation, all things wildlife. Let's start the conversation with Rumbi Takawira. This is Conservation Conversation on ZFM Stereo.
What if we could save the world one podcast at a time? What if we could uncover the secrets of nature and protect our planet for future generations? Can we really derive maximum benefits from our natural resources without destroying them? What if we could solve the wildlife and human conflicts without harm to either side? Join us on the Conservation Conversation as we explore new ways to protect our natural resources and prevent harm to our planet.
Farming on wetland, we say no. Building on wetland, we say no. Farming on wetland, we say no. Building on wetland, we say no.
Restore and love our wetlands. This message is brought to you by the Environmental Management Agency, EMA. Together, protecting the environment.
Indeed, together, let's protect the environment. Hello and welcome to the Conservation Conversation right here on ZFM Stereo, my station, your station, where we lead the African narrative on conservation. As I always say, for Africans, by Africans. Thank you so much for joining us. Playing in the background is Daniel Duchel's Enduring Hope. Feel free to get in touch with us on 0772-168045. That's +263 772-168045. Or follow us on social media at ZFM Stereo across all platforms and at the_conservation_conversation on Instagram. Or just follow me at Rumbi Takawira on Instagram and at Newsbay on X. And today we're diving into something close to my heart, that's youth advocacy in climate change. But before we get into it, I want us to talk a little bit about what's around the corner. So next week, from the 10th of November, the world's attention turns to Belém, Brazil, for COP30. That's the 30th United Nations Climate Change Conference. So now COP is where global leaders, scientists, activists, and communities come together to negotiate how we tackle the climate crisis. Everything from reducing carbon emissions, financing climate adaptation, to even protecting biodiversity. Now, what makes COP30 so special is that it's happening right in the heart of the Amazon basin, one of the world's most vital ecosystems. And the Amazon doesn't just belong to Brazil. It helps regulate the planet's climate. Yeah, the entire planet. Its protection is crucial for all of us in Africa, in Europe, everywhere, really. Now, this year, COP30 is all about action and accountability. Countries will be reviewing progress since the Paris Agreement, and it's expected to focus on climate finance, loss and damage, and how developing nations like Zimbabwe can adapt and thrive in a changing climate. And yes, I'll be there in Belém. I'll be bringing you updates, insights, and voices straight from COP30, connecting global negotiations to the amazing work young people are doing right here, back home. Now, as the world gears up for these big conversations, it's important to remember real climate action doesn't just happen in conference halls. It happens in communities, it happens in classrooms, and even on farms. And that's exactly what today's episode is about, how young people in Zimbabwe are stepping up to lead the climate movement. How sure what we get into it.
I'm Rumizai Takawira, a conservation journalist, wildlife enthusiast, adventurer, and an advocate for community development. I have embarked on a journey to discover the vastness of nature and how we can play a part to protect it. The dangers, the effects, and the solutions to sustaining the earth. It's the Conservation Conversation.
Once again, thank you so much for joining us on the Conservation Conversation. Excited to be discussing so many critical issues on how we can take better care of our planet. And joining me today are two incredible guests who embody a spirit that tries to look at how young Zimbabweans can be stepping up to lead the climate movement. I mean, we'll also be unpacking how youth-led initiatives connect with larger policy frameworks like the African Union's Agenda 2063, which envisions the Africa we want, prosperous, peaceful, and sustainable. And by the way, remember, the Zimbabwe Youth Empowerment Strategy was recently launched by the president through the Ministry of Youth, which highlights gender and climate change as cross-cutting pillars, showcasing how climate change is cross-cutting, right? It's in every sector. And so are gender issues. And these policies remind us that climate action isn't just an environmental issue. It's a development issue, a gender issue, and a youth opportunity. In studio today, we have Elaine Chiroto, who is representing the Disaster Management Student Association, that's DMSAA, at the University of Zimbabwe. It's one of the leading youth-driven groups working on disaster management and climate control. And then I also have Munesu Shechiveso, who's not only the Secretary General of Climate Control, but he's also a climate activist, he's a farmer and entrepreneur. And of course, both Elaine and Munesu work together under climate control as well. True advocates for sustainable development. Now, together, they'll be sharing how young people are taking action through programs like their upcoming tree planting initiative on the 21st of November at St. Peter's Kubatana, where they plan to plant 100 trees, a symbolic and practical step toward a greener Zimbabwe. All right, grab your notebooks. Let's get straight into it, into the conversations with Elaine and Munesu. And thank you so much for joining us as we're talking about youth voices for climate action. I'm getting straight into it, you guys. Elaine, you are the leading student association on disaster management and climate control at the University of Zimbabwe. How is DMSA empowering young people to become real change agents in climate action and just beyond awareness campaigns? Because we got so many of those.
Thank you very much, Rumbi. So as the Disaster Management Student Association at the University of Zimbabwe, our focus has always been to go beyond awareness and move toward youth empowerment, real youth empowerment, actually, in climate action. So we believe that young people shouldn't just talk about climate change. They should be equipped to take meaningful action. We don't want to hear your words. We want to see your work. We want to give you our work. So within Disaster Management Student Association, DMSA in short, we have created platforms where youth gain practical experience and leadership skills. For example, through our outreach programs in communities like Wings of Grace Trust in Mufakosi, Takari, and also St. Paul's Musami, Shimanmani, Kariba, so many places that we've visited. Our members plan, coordinate, and lead activities. That is, we do all those things. With the help of our patrons who will be helping us where we face difficulties. But we plan, coordinate, and lead these activities and even write these reports. And from tree planting to disaster preparedness education. And these projects are intentionally designed to help youth develop hands-on skills such as risk assessment, community engagement, project management, and monitoring and evaluation, real tangible skills. It's about building confidence and competence so that the students can become decision makers and problem solvers, not just volunteers, which is something that we really want to do away with. One decision makers, one problem solvers. And we also link our members to internships and mentorship programs. For example, I myself included was interned at the Climate Change Management Department, which I met you, and also we have members that have gone to Environmental Management Agency. We have members that have were interned at the Department of Civil Protection and other institutions, vast institutions. So this helps bridge that gap between university learning and professional practice. We even have members that are full-on attached at the Disaster Management Association that work within project management, research, and so forth. And at the same time, we encourage youth-driven innovation, for example, which is something that I'm going to talk about later on, but in detail, we have all the disaster management preparedness guideline, which will be a practical tool. We are working on it to help communities assess and improve their readiness for climate-related disasters. So, and we've also done training on our members. We've gone to the high fire department, where we trained more than 60 members in basic fire training, and we've also done first aid training at the University of Zimbabwe there with our members. They have certificates for all of these things. So as you can see, in short, DMSA is all about empowering youth to combine education, leadership, and action. So our members, they're not just participants in climate conversations. We're not just there to talk, we're there to act. And they are also becoming the implementers of solutions, the future of policy influencers, and the next generation of climate leaders for Zimbabwe.
I want us to connect local action to global agendas. Elaine, major frameworks like the AU Agenda 2063, for example, and the Paris Agreement emphasize youth participation. How does DMSA align its programs, such as, you see, the upcoming 100 tree planting initiative that you guys have at St. Peter's Kubatana, with some of these global and continental visions?
Okay, so DMSA, as DMSA, we deliberate these links between what we do locally and those broad frameworks, because everything that we do is guided by those frameworks, and it also contributes to those frameworks. For example, you mentioned the 100 tree planting day, which is on the 21st of November at St. Peter's Kubatana. So it is framed as a local contribution to biodiversity restoration, carbon sequestration, and also urban resilience. So this is concrete local action that feeds into national NDC targets, which is nationally determined contributions targets, and also the continental goals under Agenda 2063. And our activities are chosen to support adaptation priorities. I've mentioned the NDCs, adaptation priorities, which include food systems, urban flood risk reduction, green infrastructure. For example, planting native shade and fruit trees contributes to food security and heat reduction in urban schools. And this isn't the first tree planting that we've done. We have also done in Ndombo Shawa, like I mentioned previously, and also at Sakari, and Paul's Musami in Murewa. These are supporting adaptation priorities, national NDC targets, and also the AU Agenda 2063 and the Paris Agreement emphasizes youth participation. And we train our members, which is students, to act as local implementers and monitoring agents. So the youth participation, in quotes, line becomes practical participation. And we're doing everything, we are collecting simple data and narratives from every activity. Survival rates, like human money, participation, community feedback, and so that we can show how local actions aggregate into progress towards national commitments, like the nationally determined sorry, nationally adaptation plans and the nationally determined contributions, and also continental visions. So by working with the Civil Protection, which is one of our partners, and EMMA and the Climate Change Management Department and University Departments, we ensure that the local projects can be scaled or integrated with government plans, turning a single school planting like St. Peter's Kubatane into a model for municipal greening.
I like that. Thanks, Elaine. Now, Moneso, youth empowerment and policy impact are key areas that I really want to be looking at here. And remember, the strategy highlights youth-driven innovation in sustainability. So from your perspective, how can young entrepreneurs in agriculture, like yourself, and also in the climate fields, take advantage of such policies to create real impact?
So as youth innovators and entrepreneurs, let us take advantage of the Climate Change Bill. Why? We have to ensure that within the Climate Change Bill is a youth climate fund, a fund specific for youth in Zimbabwe. Why? Because most of these UN agencies under the UNFCCC, they've got their own restrictions on funding the youth. For example, if you want to apply for a funding or a grant, you'd be like, the organization must have 5 years in existence, must have a balance statement of a minimum of 60,000 and above. But yet you are saying, as Africa, we need urgent attention, and we are trying to develop our continent as soon as possible. We can't meet their terms and conditions. So at least our government must have a youth agent fund whereby the ministry can evaluate and assess the projects of youth organizations, and they can approve them and ensure a little or small amount of funding is given to those youth organizations, so that we try and create a better future for Zimbabweans. Because I'm not gonna lie, the future of Zimbabwe lies in the university of students, lies within the youth of Zimbabwe. That's where the innovation takes place. That's why you see most of the innovation hubs in Zimbabwe are centered in universities, because that's where all the technology is based. So if we do not prioritize those innovation hubs and innovations under the climate change theory, we won't go further, because the youth know how best we can tackle these issues. So there is need to fund those innovations under climate change within tertiary institutions, so that as a country we can develop and go further and mitigate and adapt to the already concurring climate change issues as a nation.
Okay, I hear you. A dedicated fund for the youth when it comes to climate innovation. Okay, now remember, I spoke about the integration of gender and climate being cross-cutting issues in any sector, right? And the recently launched Youth Empowerment Strategy in Zimbabwe under the Ministry of Youth identifies gender and climate change as cross-cutting pillars. How is your organization making sure that both young women and men are equally involved and benefiting from your climate programs?
All right, so before we go to how we make sure that there's gender balance in our climate programs, I'll start by saying that you can see from the organization we have gender balance. Our previous chairperson was a gentleman called Arnold Churilai, and then I was the vice chairperson during that time last year, and now I'm the chairperson, and my vice chairperson is another gentleman who's in part three. His name is Ifon. So you know that there is gender balance. We make sure that there's gender balance in our organization first before we go to the M programs, because how we operate also influence how we influence those climate programs. And also we make sure that we integrate gender intentionally, not incidentally. It's not something that just comes as incidental. When we're planning, we make sure that there is gender balance in everything. In all our targeted outreach and leadership courses, we encourage and support female student leaders for project committee logistics. I mean, in communications, we make sure that there is a balance in this gender, no one's left behind. And we actively recruit from both male and female dominated programs to balance perspectives and skills, and also design activities that reduce gendered balance, so that we consider who bears, for example, we can consider who bears climate impacts locally, for example, women's water and food responsibility, and include interventions that reduce those burdens, for example, household garden farming. And we also make sure that there's gender sensitive training content. Our capacity building includes modules on gendered impacts of disasters. We also have that as a module in our in our programs, and we also include an inclusive community engagement techniques so members can design gender responsive interventions. For field activities, we put in place safeguards, gender balance teams, clear codes of conduct. They all know the clear codes of conduct, even when we recruited our members, they have those clear codes of conduct so young women can participate fully and safely, and also young men. Even when we're going out for field work, we make sure that there's gender balance. We say there are 30 people going, 15 women, 15 men, and so forth, because we want to make sure that everyone is involved, all genders are involved. And when we measure outcomes, we measure by gender. So when monitoring, we disaggregate data, participation, benefits, knowledge gains by gender, to make sure our programs are actually benefiting young women as much as men. And we also partnership with the gender initiatives, for example, campus gender clubs, He for She, which we're also in talks with Girl Up, and the Ministry's Youth Empowerment Strategy priorities to align activities with national gender climate objectives. So, yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Elaine. But back to you, Monesu. As global climate negotiations continue, for example, we've got the COP coming up, right? We've got COP meetings coming up. How can Zimbabwean youth, through organizations like DMSA, Climate Control, make their voices heard in shaping national commitments?
As Zimbabwean youth, we need to have more negotiation skills, because as youth in Zimbabwe, we have faced climate change effects more often than the developed countries, because these effects have been caused by the developed countries, which are failing to compensate for the effects they have caused on our continent. So as youths in Zimbabwe, we need to advocate for that more often, so that they take responsibility of their activities they have implemented upon us that are making us face these effects of climate change. Because if we do not negotiate, if we do not take part in these negotiations, Africa will continue to face the rise of effects on climate change more rapidly than any other continent in the world. Right now, we're targeted that would rise our temperatures by 1.5%, but now it's on 3% higher than the 1.5%, meaning is African youth, we need to negotiate more. We need our voices more on those frontal tables, so that they know how we are being affected. It's not about the present day, but it's about the future, how the future is being affected. So as African youth, if we do not advocate for our future will not exist. We need to act upon it. We need to advocate. We need to negotiate on a better future of Africa. If we don't do that, Africa will die because of these effects of climate change. We need to be there. We need to sit on those high tables. They have to fund us for the activities, for the activities they have done that has contributed to these effects. They need to compensate for that. If they do not, our future is in dead hands. We do not have a future. We need to advocate for that. It's not about Africa, but it's about the world at all. Because without us and without the youth in the whole world, our future is doomed. The future of the world belongs to the hands of the youth. So as youth in the world, we need to collaborate. We need to be united. We need to advocate for climate change, adaptation, and mitigation.
Well, indeed, it is important that you mention that at such a time as this, as we're actually gearing up for COP30, which is taking place next week. And also, we've got COP20, which is on wildlife, the protection of wildlife for endangered species. That CITES, the Convention on the International Trade in Endangered Species of Flora and Fauna, which is also taking place just after COP30. While I was talking there to Elaine Chiroto, representing the Disaster Management Student Association, DMSA, at the University of Zimbabwe. She is the chairperson. And I also had Mr. Muneswishe Chiveso, who is the Secretary General of Climate Control. And he is also an activist, a farmer, and an entrepreneur. True advocates of sustainable development. Well, thanks for that, Munesu. Thanks so much, Elaine. Time moves so quickly when you're having fun, especially when you have energetic young people in the room. But this was an inspirational conversation from campus leadership to community action. Elaine and Munesu share our proof that when young people take charge, sustainability stops being just a dream and it becomes quite a movement, right? And as we head into COP30 in Belém, I just want us to carry that same energy, demanding action, demanding accountability and inclusion for youth everywhere. I'll be sharing updates and behind the scenes insights from COP30 throughout the month. So make sure you follow the Conservation Conversation, follow ZFM Stereo on all platforms and be a part of the journey. But I'll have to close it off here for this evening. We've spoken about the importance of young people and their participation. We've spoken about how they can turn policy into practice and the role that innovation, education, and entrepreneurship can also play, and how to make sure that the next generation isn't just invited to the table, but is it also has the power to be actually in the lead. I'm going to leave you with the three R's that I always leave you with, because you need to remember to reduce, reuse, and recycle. We need to take better care of our planet, reminding you that the climate crisis is real, but so is our power to change it. I'll meet you again next week, and I'll be coming to you live from Belém. Till then, take care.
Tune in next week for Conservation Conversation with Rumbi Takawira, only on ZFM Stereo.